League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Hello and welcome to Season 4 of the Sunday Podcast, presented by SportsShoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
This podcast is all about elite distance running in the UK.
We're here to give you all the latest news updates around the sport,
as well as weekly interviews with athletes and coaches.
Stay up to date by following us on Instagram and X at Sunday Podcast.
And make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel too, where we post athlete workout videos, shoe reviews and more.
Thanks for listening. And as always, we hope you enjoy the episode.
Okay, welcome to Season 4 of the Sunday Podcast, and Happy New Year if you're listening on the Monday, but this is coming out on New Year's Eve, so enjoy your celebrations tonight if you're listening straight away. Matt and I are back with a slightly new format for you, and hopefully you'll enjoy this as we've done quite a bit of, I guess, market research, Matt, just asking around what people seem to like, and hopefully you'll enjoy this. But we're still going to have our interview format, but first of all, Matt, what are you up to at the moment? You're prepping for Ribble Valley.
You could say that, mate. I'm in that horrible limbo period between Christmas and New Year's, forgetting which day of the week it is. But no, I got struck with a case of COVID, so I haven't been too well, but managed to sort of get a little bit better over this Christmas period. So looking forward to going up to Ribble Valley. I've never actually done it, so looking forward to it. The course looks quite good, but going to go up with a few mates and my brother, so get a good race out. And I think we'll preview it a little bit. Obviously, by the time this comes out, Ribble Valley will be done and dusted, but got some good feel. I saw James West just got added to the start list. Mark Scott's doing it on the men's side as well. So there's going to be a good race between those two. And then kind of Rory Leonard, I think, is doing it. So some big names. I think it'll be another fast. I mean, it's always fast, isn't it? Another fast 10K. So we'll preview that in a little bit more detail on the men's and women's sides towards the back end of this episode. But as for me, I'm plodding along, mate. I'm plodding along. So thanks for asking.
Yeah, plodding along is better than nothing, isn't it? So is your brother doing it as well? Or is he just heading up with you?
Yeah, no, Zach's doing it.
He is, okay.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting to see how he rolls. Preparing for a little bit of an indoor campaign as well. So, and I think, you know, racing this time of year is, I mean, let's talk about the news as well. Like, we saw Laura Muir bosh out that 3K in Cardiff. That was probably, you know, that went down, I think, the last time we spoke, or just after the last time we had an episode. Yeah. It's always interesting to see how athletes winter, and you just wonder, you know, how they're training. I mean, I thought, you know, Muir ran 3 seconds inside the qualifying time. It just shows you how hard the qualifying times are now. The fact that she is world-class. I know it was in a low-key meet for her. She had, you know, a bit of pacing, but, you know, it wasn't like a race as such. But I was just like, you know, we spoke about those world standards and how hard they are. And, you know, I honestly just look at them and think, you know, especially in the distance, over that 3K, it's going to be very, very hard for some of our people to qualify. So it'll be interesting to see what goes down this indoor campaign, because I think a lot of people are doing it. But before, you used to see a lot of people aim for a European indoors or a world indoors. But I don't think people are necessarily aiming for it, which is a shame because it's in Glasgow. And I think a lot of people are doing it just to hit times and qualifying standards. And so I think you'll see people have three or four races, but I look at the British champs and I wonder if many people even turn up to compete there.
Yeah, and it's a tough one because in the past it was a bit of a stepping stone competition, wasn't it? It was like you can make Euro indoors and that might be the springboard then to go and make a world champs outdoors, something like that. But now, yeah, it might be a real struggle kind of indoors. Obviously, yeah, world indoors this time around. I think if British Athletics change their kind of policy and start looking at these rankings, it might be a bit better. Because I think we have argued on the pod before that if you are way off the world rankings, you probably shouldn't be going anyway, even if you hit the standard. Like if there's a host of athletes, as we know there are, like on the women's side who can run around 8:30 and on the men's side who can run kind of between 7:30, 7:40, we shouldn't be sending people who run 7:50, really. So it is kind of fair enough as long as we start taking into account those ranking points. And if athletes are then within those and they're in a kind of reasonable spot in the world, then definitely they should go. But we're just going to have to see on that one. Hopefully the indoors might change that. Like, can you imagine we only sent sort of like four or five athletes, for example? You might then think, okay, well, we have to change our policy because we should be sending more of a team than that, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's always been, they've always been big teams, haven't they? A little bit like the Eurocross. Mm-hmm. I am really looking forward to it. I don't usually get that excited about indoors, but I'm really looking forward to this indoor season coming up over the next few months because I just think we are going to see some incredible times run by lots of British athletes. And yeah, with these Boston meets, like this is just a whole new game of chasing times, isn't it? Like I think we are going to see Olympic standards hit in Feb, you know, maybe even back end of January. I think we are going to start to see some Olympic standards hit in the 5K on the men's and women's side. So I'm very excited to see all that go down. I think, you know, Josh Kerr announcing that he's going to race Milroy's Games, try and go for that 2 mile record as well. And he got, you know, looking, he got kind of a bit of backlash because he wasn't going to do world indoors. And I got no idea why he was getting backlash for that. Like he's sticking to his guns. He's never ventured, like, I guess outside of his training setup at, you know, throughout the year at all, unless it's like peak race season and he's on his way to a major championships. And this is the thing. I think even athletes like him, they don't value the world indoors that much when it's an Olympic year.
And why should you really? You know, like if you're as good as him, I don't mean you have to.
I think it's one of those things: a lot to lose and not much to gain. You know, he's a world champion outdoors. There's a lot to lose indoors going into Olympic year if you can't quite get fit enough, whatever. And if you're just not as good indoors as some other people, you're vulnerable, aren't you? And then I think you go into Olympic year with a bit of, you know, knocked confidence and stuff. So, whereas you've got athletes like Muir who love indoors. Like, she sets so many records indoors. Like, it's, you know, for her, it is part of her kind of build up and her routine. So, but yeah, I'm just looking forward to seeing a lot of Brits attack a lot of fast times. I think it's going to take the sport up another level from what we've already seen. More stuff in the, I mean, on Laura Muir as well. I think it looks like now she is quite open about saying she is officially coached by Steve Vernon.
Yeah, and I think it's only good for the sport in a British perspective. I think it will only be good for Laura Muir to have a better coach. But I think when it becomes interesting is if Steve, for example, started taking on athletes who are of a lower caliber again, if that makes sense. Because I think at the moment, there's not really any, I don't think, obviously Steve Vernon's role with British Athletics is what we're referring to here. I don't mean there's any kind of conflict of interest in that Laura Muir is going to be on any team anyway. So there's never going to be a time where there might be some sort of conflict of interest there, you know? Whereas if he, say, coached some of the athletes he coached previously who are kind of on the cusp of teams, you then might think, okay, is there an issue here? I'm not really sure there's any rules or legislation around British Athletics on who you can and can't coach. But obviously there's always been people in selection meetings who have coached athletes on the circuit, because how can you be the head of endurance or involved with British Athletics if you're not still actively coaching anyway, in a sense? So it's a difficult one, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that relationship, I guess, evolves. But I think from British Athletics' point of view, they've got, you know, pretty much one of our best athletes ever in history. And to not help her out and not support her would just be ridiculous.
we want to see our best athletes working. Yeah. We're sometimes quite critical of our national governing body, but really, like, to make the most of it, our best athletes should be working closely with our NGBs if they're offering what that athlete wants. And if not, say like a Josh Kerr, you have that elsewhere, fine. But if you're not getting it elsewhere, then you work closely with the NGB to do that. So yeah, it's an interesting one. The other thing I was going to say, mate, about indoors, are you ready to call it short track yet? That's the that's been the kind of definitely on Twitter and definitely over in the US, they're kind of having this argument at the moment because technically it's short track. I get the reasoning behind it in a way, but I think it definitely will take a few years for people to get used to.
Look, World Athletics love to change the name of things, don't they? They love to just rebrand by just changing the name of something. So if that's what they're calling it, you know, I mean, it is indoors, though. It's not, you know, for me, it obviously is short track. You call it whatever you like. That is, that just has no bearings on me, to be fair. I couldn't care less. But yeah, no, I think, you know, with that Muir and Vernon relationship, I think, you know, a lot of people say, you know, we are, I guess no one's knocking it because it's Muir, but it is one rule for her and one rule for another. So I guess, you know, I can understand people's frustrations if they are frustrated with it. But I think from our point of view, you know, our best athlete in history, probably one of them, you know, needs help and British Athletics have provided it. So whether it'll be temporary or not, I guess, you know,
it's not too dissimilar from when Mo was working with kind of Barry Fudge and forgetting my names now.
Gary, well, I don't know. You know, I think they were never, you know, Barry Fudge was more of a, I wouldn't say he was ever a coach, was he?
I think everyone knew that was sort of the case after kind of the Salazar incident. So, I mean, Mo went straight from Salazar to Gary Locke. But then I think he was coached by Barry Fudge in between. So,
yeah, I think my thing, man, is does it end well? Where does, you know, what does Laura Muir do this summer? Does she still compete in 1500? Will we see Laura Muir step up to the 5K eventually? She's coming up for 10 years, pretty much at the top flight, at the top of her game. Now, I think she first ran 355 in 2015, something like that. So, you know, it will be interesting to see her season. And is she training completely on her own or is she training with? Well, there's lots of, I'd love to know more about that setup. Obviously, we'd love to get Muir on the podcast. We'd love to get Steve Verner back on a podcast. But yeah, I would love to know more about that relationship, about that setup. And like you say, if more people will be involved in that group. One group which is killing it at the moment, Lum, and seems to be Trevor Painter's group, because, you know, he's now looking to be coaching Georgia Bell, who looks to be a serious talent, making her comeback from her junior days. And that group, I mean, goodness me, the group they take out of South Africa must be 50, 60 people deep. Success breeds success. And I think this is the thing. It's, you know, everyone is almost piggybacking off of Keely Hodgkinson, off of her success. They want to be coached by her coach, and of course Trevor is welcome to it, and you know that group just seems to be absolutely thriving. And what's more is it looks female orientated, Lum, which I think is very encouraging for lots of 8 and 15 runners who are females as well, just to add to that strength and depth in this country.
Yeah, I think so. I think I can't remember the name, so apologies. We've definitely spoken to a few female athletes on the podcast who highlighted themselves. Actually, it is quite different being an elite female who trains with sort of like your sub-elite males versus elite female who can find herself a full elite female group, because we don't seem to have as many of those, and often we have. It's brilliant that our kind of top female athletes can train with some sub-elite men, or even some elite men in certain circumstances, but to actually have kind of something that is focused on that is really important. So good. And obviously got Jenny Meadows in there as well, part of that kind of coaching team as well with Trevor Painter.
The setup almost reminds me of like a football academy. Keely Hodgkinson's your Cristiano Ronaldo, playing for Man United, and like all the other, you know, all the, I guess, the kids coming through, they're not kids, but the teenagers coming through, you know, and other athletes like jumping on the back of that group are kind of like, you know, your scholars, your reserves, and they're getting to be around Keeley. They're getting to learn from Keeley. I think that's a massive asset, and fair play to her, because from what I've seen from the outside, I mean, a lot of groups or a lot of elite athletes won't have a group that big of kind of teenagers learning their trade, because I think they would just get a bit frustrated. And I
it's
guess
almost like your classic club group, isn't it? But at a higher level.
It is, yeah. It's like a club system. Yeah. But it travels the world. and they all train together. So I found that very interesting, and hopefully we can have a little bit more on, you know, get a bit more on that relationship. And then just finally, something that I saw in the kind of news recently, and was learning this probably back end of the last summer, when Kenya had a pretty disappointing World Track Champs, you know, bar Faith Kipyegon. They were disappointing on the track, and Kenya are going to invest $1.2 million apparently in steeplechase camps, specifically in steeplechase workshops, over the next few years, because they're basically fuming that steeplechase was their event, and it doesn't have to be anymore. You know, the Ethiopians look far superior over that distance now, and obviously Albert Kali is dominating on the men's side, and I think they're frustrated. And I think this comes back to, again, we see it in the 1500, the Europeans, thanks to Jakob and everyone else, you know, Josh Kerr and people like that, I think we're starting to dominate track and field again. Europeans, then obviously the sprints are dominated by your Americans, and the East Africans, like, although they are flying on the roads, you know, they're not as, I guess, dominant in the longer distances. I think it's only a matter of time before the 5 and the 10, you know, with types of, you know, Ritsenheim's group, OAC, you've got people like Grant Fisher, you know, they're knocking on the door. And I think it could be another 4 or 5 years before, you know, we see like, I guess, a non-East African win one of these 5 or 10,000 meter titles. But I think we're catching up.
I do think it comes down to a lot of it comes down to kind of who these athletes have to look up to. Like you mentioned Keeley's group, for example, and this is the same thing, but on like a national scale. Like, yes, East Africa have had like some, like between the different countries have had some like excellent athletes in depth over the periods of time. But I think one of the reasons, for example, why on the roads they're still doing it is because Kipchoge's still the best. So the Kenyan athletes all want to be Kipchoge. And then, like, you look back and it was athletes like Kenny Sabakili, etc. Like, people like that were the ones leading the forefront so that the next generation of the Ethiopians were coming through, for example. So we don't really have a dominant track athlete now. We've seen it with Cheptegei, and I think hence why Kiplimo came through, for example, for Uganda. But I think without kind of that one person who's really dominating the event across the
What's
five
crazy,
and ten,
yeah. This is true.
It does all to that.
I think as well, like, I've read a few things on the Kenya setups, and I think, you know, their government or their, you know, governing body hasn't really welcomed new technology as much as, like, well, we don't know for sure, but, you know, obviously there is a massive doping issue in Kenya. So, but, you know, regardless of that, you know, yes, they're using super shoes, but are they doing blood lactate? Absolutely not. You know, are they, you know, taking all sorts of supplements under the sun? Absolutely not. You know, are these guys taking, you know, the latest inhalers and stuff like that we know Europeans are? Probably not. Again, you know, are they, what's their recovery like? And, you know, we were talking Kipchoge, he seems to be nailing that, or definitely, you know, getting sponsored by all these companies, but he is his own thing, isn't he? He's his own group.
Yeah.
You know, he's probably completely separate to Athletics Kenya.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. So it's interesting to see how that kind of develops. I think it'd be great if Kenya do kind of make a comeback in that event, because it was brilliant. But like you talk about that, obviously it's been a few years since Kenboy retired now. And probably he was the one really leading that charge, you know, and
what I found
my names today. We didn't have like the successor that we thought we would for like a number of years, you know.
What I found interesting was the very fact that they want to invest $1.2 million, however they're splitting that up, I don't know, but they want to invest that amount of money into just one event. And imagine,
I'd love to know what that looks like as well.
Same.
What does that look like?
Yeah. And imagine if British Athletics turned around. I mean, they haven't got the money to do that. But imagine if they turned around and they said, you know, we're going to invest $1.2 million in producing a world champion in X event. Like, interesting. That's what we're up against. However, mate, let's get stuck into this. We're rambling on a little bit. Let's get stuck into this interview with Will Barnico, your two-time European cross-country champion. It was one we very much enjoyed.
Yeah, definitely. And he's someone who we've been speaking about indoors a lot. He's someone that won't be going indoors, who's looking to actually compete at the World Cross Country Champs as well. So slightly different end of the sport, but something we love as well. So enjoy the episode. Okay, Will, first off, just welcome to the podcast. You're a double European champ now. So how does it feel and what's it been like the past couple of weeks?
Yeah, it's been, it's been absolutely sensational. Like to be able to like do it again. And when I crossed that line, I didn't really go into it thinking that I'd probably come out with that sort of result. But I just kind of found something on the line that day and kind of just took it through. But yeah, apart from that, the last couple of weeks, it's settled in now. Took a few days off just to reflect on it. And now I'm kind of starting this weekend back into the full swing of training, getting ready for races after Christmas and tracks, and just preparing for a good track season as well in the summer.
Yeah, why is it that you kind of weren't, I say you weren't expecting to win then? What was going to be your goal going in this year? And, you know, I feel like last year was a little bit of a surprise victory. Against Nick Griggs as well.
Yeah. That was... So going into it, like obviously, at the start of the season, like I had a really good leg. I remember I had a really good leg at the road relays, and I was going to the season thinking, wow, I can do something here. But like after the Mansfield, and then it kind of went... Mansfield was good, but it wasn't as good as the road relays. As soon as I hit the mud, it wasn't as good a leg. And then Liverpool, when I fell over and stuff, and kind of came 12th in a round. And to be honest, if you want to medal in the under-23s, you should be up. You should really be up there in the Liverpool. Mm. You should be on the podium at Liverpool. So I was kind of, I did fall, but my confidence was knocked a little bit by going into it.
This is interesting because I wanted to talk to you about that fall at Liverpool. Was that a bit of the same grace in the sense that, did you kind of have to reassess during the race, think on your feet and just kind of get the job done? Or did you kind of get up and were you still gunning for top spot at Liverpool? I wanted to know how you responded in that moment at Liverpool.
See, it's kind of interesting. Everyone says like, I was in that top group. I was like, I was really strong and everything, but I didn't feel as strong as I didn't feel like me. So when I fell, I was like, oh geez, I could actually not make the team here. So I was just focusing on just trying to make the team. And just settled in and just worked my way through making sure like there were no other under-23s around me. So
that was kind of a max effort at Liverpool.
Yeah, that was, I was dying at the end. Yeah. I was puffing.
I wondered if you were tactically playing it, you know, playing it safe, but
fast
forward a couple of weeks.
I'm not gonna lie. That was how I felt.
I think this is cross country. You've got to be a good bluffer.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to have a good poker face. And
yeah.
I think that's something you had at the Europeans. Something you just seem so good at now is like you seem to have a bit of a confidence, a swagger when you're racing cross country, especially. And you were just biding your time the whole way. Like, let's talk about kind of Europeans, gun to tape.
Yeah. So obviously, my confidence was knocked a little bit, but I had a bit more. Like obviously Liverpool was like my first proper muddy course, and I really struggled in the mud that day. And it just like every time I hit the mud, everyone just seemed to move away from me and just sat me. So I had a call with my coach like the following day, and he said it's good for you to run that just to see what the mud feels like, because like obviously Belgium's going to be like an absolute mud bath. And so we prepared for the race by doing a few like muddy reps and stuff, and that kind of just got me back into the field of cross again. I guess maybe because coming out of like the track and road season, you're a bit more used to running on that sort of hard, faster surface. So just that sudden switch change into mud might have just overwhelmed the body a bit, and it might have not been ready for it. So yeah, obviously doing that Liverpool and the mud preparation, obviously like that just helped. That just my body just adapted to the mud that day, and yeah, I just found something on the line I think, which just kind of helped me get through.
That's all it took, just a few muddy sessions post Liverpool, but I'm European captain. did you have to drift away from the group at Birmingham to get those sessions in? Did you find yourself doing solo sessions or
keep... So my main partner at Birmingham is Tamer Tarragano. So he's a really good runner himself.
Obviously.
Great guy. So yeah, we do pretty much most of all our threshold sessions, tempo sessions together. So yeah, so we just got away from the main group because they were doing a track session, I think, getting ready for Trafford 10. Mm-hmm. They were just doing like alternate miles or something like that. And yeah, so we just got away onto it wasn't so much muddy. It was just a bit hillier and just a bit harder, like an actual like undulating terrain. Just put a few hard efforts over that, and that kind of just, I don't know, yeah, just got the legs going a bit, got them used to the kind of more of a cross country like feel, which kind of helped it.
Is that over the famous Cofton Park?
No, that was over Grove Park, actually.
I don't know if you know Grove Park.
Yeah, it's not as big as Cofton, but right. it's much more technical than Cofton, I think. Okay. Just in case that there's a lot more turns, a lot more like running through trees and stuff. A bit more compact than Cofton,
which is a good thing coming into Euro Cofton. Yeah. What I want to talk about is, when do you decide to make your move in cross country? Because I know the French lad, Bresic, was kind of, you were just kind of keying off him, but you knew you had to break Stonier at some point.
Yeah, right? I did. Yeah. So I was looking out for him, to be fair. Because I was going into the race. I remember Rory said he was going to go out hard, and Stonier said Stonier, we know, like, he is going to just sit back and just try and just take you in the last like kilometer or whatever, 500 meters. So I was kind of thinking, well, where the hell do I put myself? Because like, I've got Rory's just going to go off like a nutter, and then I've got Matt just sitting back, so I've got to put myself in the middle somewhere. But because of the mud, like, it just slowed everything down a little bit, so everyone came together, which kind of worked out for me, because I know I've got a good burst of speed. Like, most of my races I've won and medaled in have all been down to a sprint finish. So I know if I get rid of Matt, then I can win, then I can outkick a lot, like most people, over the closing stages. So that's what I kind of just did. Got rid of Matt and then just had to out sprint the French guy. So
what have you ever had a kick finish for Estonia? Because you could outkick him. Yeah, I've never seen a kick finish receiving a pair. So
nah, I haven't outkicked Estonia. I think that would be I wouldn't want to put it down to that, to be honest.
But there is a difference between kicking, I would say, the difference between kicking in cross country and kicking on the track, right? It's a different ball game, and
it is.
You know, we saw Laros get beat by Christensen in the under-20s. It is just a different, isn't it? So maybe talk about that a little bit. Can you train that, or is it just like strength? You know, you just back yourself. You got confidence in that moment.
I think, like, with kicking, especially on the track, like in track, I find it's much more. As long as I've got a little bit of something left, like a little bit, just a tiny little bit of something, you can go flat out. But if you've got nothing left and you're just swimming, there's not a lot you can do. I think it's actually quite mental. Like, you just got to, like, I find just taking, just assessing, just looking around, just taking a few deep breaths and just really just go for it and just don't think about anything else. I think that helps. But obviously, I think the strength is a big part of it. Like, being able to get through all the mud, or if you're on the track, run the distance and still be able to top it off with a finish. I think that's it's really useful to have, because I think especially in racing today, like, most of the races, like, especially in the junior men's and like the under 23 men's, you got to have a finish. So I think it's quite vital that you train for that, like, either in the gym or just like, just trying to get strength, really.
You're never going to win if you can't kick, you know, if you can't back yourself in that moment.
especially in the track. Like, you've got to have that finish, don't you? So
just quickly, then, you mentioned the gym there. Wanted to bring this up. I've heard some crazy things about Will Barnico's planking sessions. talk about that a little bit, because this is something unique to you that I don't think many listeners will know.
Yeah, so... I don't do this anymore, but before I started running in 2017. So
not even that long ago.
Yeah, so before that, it was like I was really into my fit. I liked a bit of fitness. So I did like loads. I used to do like loads of sit ups, push-ups, planks. Yeah, and I used to be able to get a plank for like 15 minutes straight.
Wow.
But that I had to build that up over a couple of years, though. So like I'd started off with like 5 minutes, and like I started off like 5 minutes each every I used to do it like almost every day, like incremented by like a couple of seconds, and eventually I got to like 15 minutes. Yeah.
But mate, this is interesting because, you know, the whole kind of nature v nurture thing, you know, and then you start out on your running journey. But, you know, the European cross was probably the muddiest cross I've seen in a long, long time. But your upper body just did not move. You seem so, you know, controlled, relaxed and just strong through the mud. So you must look at that and be like, God, that, you know, doing that even as a kid when you weren't taking running too seriously has put you in a good position.
Honestly, it does. Obviously, like now, like with when I do S&C now, we've still got a lot of core in there. So, having a good upper body, I think, especially in the cross country season, where you need to, like, especially when below your legs are going all over the place and like the mud and like the roots and stuff, like, you just need that stability up in the core. Mm. So that definitely helps. Yeah,
definitely, man. Something else I want to talk to you about is that kind of European cross country dynamic athlete hotel. I had a little media pass for the weekend, so I popped in there, and it's a weird dynamic, right? And there's no sport like it. I brought this up. There's no sport like it where you are, you know, going to compete for the ultimate prize on a Sunday and kind of Friday, Saturday, you're sharing a hotel with everyone who's going to be on that start line racing. You're eating dinner with them. You're having to have, are the conversations awkward? Do you have to call bullshit on a few people, or like, how do you negotiate that kind of the 2 days prior to race day? Because I think there's a lot of talk, isn't there? There's a lot of people kind of flexing and mentioning sessions and this and that. How do you deal with that?
People are very different. Some guys really like to like give it the all, but amongst the GB team, everyone knows each other, so like we're all mates anyway. So
circle,
so it is kind of funny, like everyone does like bullshit a little bit, and you got guys just saying what they want to say, whether or not it's true or not. But everyone's friends at the end of the day, and it's just funny. Yeah, it's always better. I prefer it like that way, instead of like if you're meeting each other for the first time and it's kind of telling each other this, everyone's kind of just in agreement. No one really like questions it. But when you're down with each other and you like your mates and stuff, it's kind of fun to just like say, nah, you didn't do that, or are you really feeling that, or
do you ever get tired of it? Do you ever have to, like, you know, just kind of switch off?
No, not really. I mean, there's most of the day I just sat in my room, like just watching YouTube and stuff and just chilling with my roommate. But but like at dinner times and breakfast and stuff, everyone comes down together, we have a big chat. We talk like kind of into the night sometimes, but it's good fun.
And that competition against rival countries, do you team GB, I feel like it is probably the one event, you know, track probably not the same, but on the cross country it is the one event where you guys go in a little bit more fired up as a team. And I think you are, you know, you're running for the vest a little bit more on the country. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, in the track it's much more because there's just like there's one other person with you, and it's much more, I mean, a lot of the time your other guy hasn't even made the final or anything like that. So sometimes you're just in on your own, and track is, I always find with track it's just a lot more intense. Whereas cross country, like because there's a team element and just everyone's doing it. I think it's a lot more chill, to be honest, than the track. The track's quite, especially when you're going through the rounds as well. Like you've got to make this round with all this straining, much more straining. Yeah.
Okay, man, let's delve into it, if you don't mind. Typical training weeks. You don't have to give us too many specifics, but I think it's really interesting because you are someone who is really good on the country, and I think you're going to be an exceptional runner on the track. I don't think we've seen the real Will Barnico on the track yet, but you know, you talked about those little muddy sessions, and you know, you talked about struggling at Liverpool with a little bit over distance. I think that 7k at Euros was kind of, or you know, your sweet spot, I guess. But what's a typical week in the winter when you're kind of preparing for Eurocross?
So we, like every year we've been trying to, like me and Tim have been trying to build upon it a little bit. So so Monday is like a sort of tempo threshold. So that's like sort of maybe 5 to 6 miles at threshold, just straight. Then Tuesday, yeah, and then in the evening I have like a little gym session. Then Tuesday I have like an easy 40 minutes. Then Wednesday is a session, like either on the track or the grass. Then I do my like longer run on a Thursday, which is about 10 mile. That's on the Thursday. Then Friday, I don't do anything on a Friday. Then Saturday's a session. And then like either on the track, Saturday is normally on the grass actually in the winter. Mm. And then in Sunday's like another 45 minute easy run. And then I do a gym session on the Thursday as well.
Mm. Nice, man. Typical week. I mean, I think, yeah, I had heard you do relatively low mileage, but talk about that relationship with Tim, your coach, and as well, like with, you know, I think, when did you start at Birmingham? A few years ago now, but, you know, training alongside Jack Rowe when he was kind of first making his GB senior vest and starting to become a pretty big deal in the country. Yeah. Like, how useful was that for yourself?
Yeah, Jack was a huge mentor for me. Yeah, so I sort of joined Tim in 2021. Basically on the basis that that group didn't have a track and I really wanted to try on a track. I got picked for Euros that year.
Mm.
So I moved over to Tim and because of the group. I did a few sessions with Jack like the previous winter in just after like November lockdown.
Mm.
And yeah, so I did a lot of training with him and like the training was just different to when you're in a junior sort of setup. Like, yeah. As a junior, like you almost like you feel like you almost you do hardly anything. You do like 500-300 meter reps, but everything's just a sprint. Whereas I remember doing the first rep with Jack and I was just like, why are we not sprinting? Like we were kind of like we had like a 7.5 minute like tempo thing, and I was just like, what is this? So yeah, he just completely changed my outlook of training and just it was just kind of that step up from being a really junior athlete to becoming a bit more intermediate / senior. But yeah, so obviously kind of the dynamic at the moment is sort of holiday time now. I'd be going back home, training with Jack at St. Mary's in Stoke Park, mm. which is like sort of kind of around London area. And then in term time, obviously back up in Birmingham.
Mm. Nice, man. And you know, you talk about Jack being a mentor. You're both Puma, and am I right in saying yeah. you've got the same agent? And this is yeah. something I kind of wanted to talk to you about. Is I think when you're 18, 19, or you must have signed with Puma when you're 19, were you? At the time, was it?
Just
turned 20,
yeah.
maybe
just before I turned 20. Yeah,
you know, you would have. Is it fair to say you would have had very little knowledge on contracts and sponsors? And was it even something that was crossing your mind? But thanks to having kind of Jack and Tim who had gone through that process, did that help you out a lot?
Yeah, it did help me out a lot. Obviously, like I was going to get signed off. Well, I thought I would be because everyone's telling me I would off the back of Euro under 20 cross. But I was like, okay, yeah, we'll see. Then, yeah, my agent called me and I said, there's a number of people who want to get in touch. And then, I kind of just set it to the side and let him deal with it. And then just pit Puma basically. And also because I think they had a relationship with Jack and Jack's, I reckon like something like that must've bit more pushy on the Puma side, just because with Jack as well. So makes things easier.
Mm.
You're looking for something like that.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. And yeah. Nice, man. I guess you didn't have to think. It sounds like you didn't have to think too hard about it. Then kind of came to you.
No.
And, you know, do you like to keep that side separate and just, you know, so you don't have to think too much and be involved too much, if you like.
Yeah. I don't really think about any of that sort of stuff too much. I just prefer to like, as long as the running's going well, then everything else will go well. So I'd rather it be that way around than, you don't want that sort of end of the deal to affect you and your run, mm-hmm. basically. Sort of like the pressures of like, you know, what if you're going to, like, if you think you're going to get dropped or whatever, like you don't want that. Cause as soon as that comes into it, cause it's already a very stressful sport. So you don't want, like, especially with like student athletes with degrees and stuff, like you kind of just want to keep it down to a minimum. So.
Mm.
As long as the running is going well, everything else will sort itself out. So,
absolutely. Now, you are a racer. Are you playing the long game? Because, you know, from us kind of watching you, it looks like you are. And it's good to see because I think few juniors actually do that these days. And I know you're technically under 23 now. You know, but you've just you've gone through the age groups very carefully, very gradually, and you've never really like got to the track and ripped up a few times in chase. I don't know if you've even raced abroad, bar being at European Championships, have you?
No, yeah, we've just kept it very simple, just stayed in the UK. Like the times will come as I get more running in the legs and stuff, but and as I get into faster races, but I just think unless I'm running like 3:35 or whatever, there's no point in going abroad. Like BMC, the fastest time BMC was 3:35 anyway this year. Like, I mean, I ended up running 3:40 in a good Trafford race, but and also I hadn't even ran done a 5,000 meters this year. My debut was at Sport City, so there was no reason for me to go abroad. So just stayed in the UK. And yeah, racing, like, I don't know, some people, I feel like now, would you say people value times more than medals? I mean,
I would, and that's why I feel like it's encouraging to see someone like yourself who doesn't get sidetracked by chasing times. I saw you run that race at Sports City, and you know, for that to be your debut, you know, and you kind of went with the mill for a bit, and obviously couldn't quite hang with him, but then you went on and got a bronze medal at the European Under 23 Championships.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, so it's just like the thing is, once I feel like when you're on the start line and you're sort of in and around the times, like everyone's, you haven't ran in the same race as your competitors have done in when they got those really fast times. So if you kind of put yourself in that race, you said you could have even beaten them. Just because they got a faster time than you doesn't mean necessarily that you can't go with them. Like, you're all in the same bracket. No one in that race had ran like 13 flat. It wasn't like everyone was reachable, maybe apart from Charles Hicks, who had run 13:20, but like all the guys who'd run like 40, 38, 39, 36, they were all grasping. As long as you get the decisions right on the day and race it right and just be sensible, you can do anything.
Does it keep you hungry having not, because I sometimes feel like if someone smashes a good time in the season,
yeah,
like that's a goal.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. It does. Like, especially when you see others around you running ridiculous times, like sometimes it does play up a little bit, but you just got to be patient and know that you can do it too. I think that's the most important thing.
Quick question then, man. You've got an auto spot for World Cross. If you want it there, according to selection policy, are we going to see you in where is it, Belgrade, and, you know, repping a senior vest that'll be your first senior vest wearing it as well.
Yeah, definitely. I want to give that a shot. So I don't want to turn that down. I think I'm going to take the experience there. So
fantastic. That's really good to see. Again, this is, you know, World Cross is something where I don't know how many seniors we're going to have there, because I think a lot of them are going to be chasing times, you know, those trying to get that Olympic spot, fair enough. But it's good to see that you're going to toe the line in a race environment and get that experience against the very best in the world. How will you prepare now from now until then? Are we going to see you on the cross country a few more times? What's the plan looking like?
I think we're going to try and get a cross race in at some, maybe Bucks or some race. I might do a 5K on the road, just because the race is just so fast, like velocity wise, it's just like, even though it is a cross country, they're going at like 2:55s per k. It's just how fast the race is. So I'll probably get a few. I'll have to do some speed work just to go with these guys. I mean, they are so fast. But like, it's just a cross race, just to get ready for it, and then World Cross 5K roads. Just get a bit more 5K specific just before, I reckon, and then get into it.
Yeah.
Then after.
To cope with that first mile or so.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. And then just to finish up, Sport Shoes is going to be selling Puma shoes on their site from kind of early on in the new year. So what's your daily trainer? What's your go-to with Puma, and what's your race shoe?
Oh, so I like the Velocity Nitro 2s. They're just they're like their easy shoe. It's very lightweight. And it's really comfy, and I really like it. And then I'm at sort of my tempo issue, where I do. You can also do easy runs on this as well. It's very versatile. You can do anything in it. Reps, the deviates, and then any of their nitro carbon shoes are really good as well. Like I did my I did the road relays in that shoe, and that was a really good shoe as well. So
mm.
there's that's a cool it's a cool it's a cool looking shoe as well. It's got like a, you can see the carbon plate go through like the sole.
Yeah, I think that shoe is going to be a big big hitter in 2024, I got to admit. And just finally on the track, have you thought about the track yet? This is fantastic. So where will we see you on the track, just attacking another 5K? What's the plans?
Yeah, 15s and 5. I want to I didn't race loads last year. I want to race a bit more. I raced like 3 15s and 3 5s. So I'm going to do hit out an international. I think maybe IFAM 5,000 meters. And then at by the back end of the season, do drop down to some speed and do some 15s, I think.
And there's no under 23 championships, is there? So there's little championships for you to do.
So it's just a free hit for me just to learn my times. I'll try and go for as close to like the Olympic and European times as possible. Just lower that, just get that 5K down. And then you've also got to lower the 15 time down as well. Like you can't be a good 5K runner without having that 15 speed.
Mm-hmm.
You look at all the best 5K runners like Katir, Jakob, they've all got ridiculous 15s, don't they? So
agree with that, man.
They've got
Well, fantastic, Will. We will let you go. We wish you the very best in 2024 and we look forward to seeing you at the World Cross Country Championships.
Okay, so fantastic to hear from two-time European cross-country champ Will Barnacote there, and across two age groups as well, because sometimes we have kind of your double European champs, but in under 20 and then first year as an under 23 as well, winning that title. Fantastic to see. Matt, what did you take most from that interview with Will?
Mate, lots of things. I mean, I've been a big fan of that, Will Barnacote for a few years now. I mean, I've known Jack Rowe quite closely, and kind of when Jack first started talking about Barnacote, I guess maybe 2020 in that COVID year when they were training together quite a lot. I know he was excited at the time. I know Tim Eglin, his coach, was excited at the time. And he is just living up to the hype. But I think what I love best about him, Lum, is the fact that, and I know me and you have spoke about this, he's not really chasing times. He is like your old school racer. He's literally ticked every kind of junior box, I guess. As they've come, you know, he's won national titles on the cross, on the track, you know, he's won medals at European juniors. And now I think, you know, he's almost ready to start attacking the senior ranks. And I think like he said, this year for him is the free hit.
Mm. Yeah, 100%. It'll be super interesting to see because, like you say, he hasn't really chased those times. And this year he's got a chance where there's not really any pressure to make a senior team at all. I like how he did say he's going to try and get as close to those kind of European Olympic times as he can. So he's not putting it kind of completely out of his reach, but there's no pressure on that. Like, he can just keep chipping away, keep improving. And will Barnacote be the next Matt Stonier, you know? He also mentioned he'll be racing some 1500s as well as the 5 because you need both. I think probably his best event is the 5, but I think Stonier's best event probably the 5 as well, perhaps in the future. But yeah, he could be someone that really, I think we see makes some massive jumps this year, particularly if he can get in some of those good races as well.
It is mad. I mean, one thing I found interesting about Barnacote, and I think he's going to have his coach Tim are going to have a little bit of a headache over the next coming years, is obviously his lack of mileage. And to truly be a world-class 5,000-meter runner, 5K, 10K runner, what is the kind of minimum amount of mileage that you have to hit, you know? Because can he, like, rewrite, I guess, the rule book and still hover around that sort of, he sounds like he runs 50, 60 mile a week from what he's told us. Can he hover around there? And get down to a 13:20 or a 13:15 5K off of that mileage, which would be outrageous. Or you know, does he have to go chasing mileage, and will he have injury problems? Because he looks like a very kind of like, he's super lean, but at the same time, he's a really powerful runner. And when he starts upping his mileage, will he have injuries? Like, will we be like, what could have been? So I think, you know, that is going to be interesting to see what happens over the next couple of years and how, you know, he does go about upping his mileage, how him and Tim choose to do it. But you know, someone who he reminds me of a little bit, Lum, is Justin Knight. Justin Knight, that, you know, he ran 12:48 in 2021 over 5,000 meters. And rumor has it, he barely touched over a 70 mile week. Mm. Rumor has it, he was a freak talent as well. So Barnico could be similar to that. But yeah, it'll be interesting kind of how he develops and if we see massive gains once he gets his mileage up, or will it be a case of, you know, he's no different when he's running 80, 90 mile a week to when he's running 50, 60 mile a week.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting one. Obviously, he's still got so much time. I'm trying to think how old he is now. He must just be 21 still, or 20. So crazy, crazy young athlete still. And I'm sure Tim Eglin's got a plan. Obviously, we see Jack Rowe, who you mentioned, on some pretty high mileage these days, and he's built up to that gradually, probably not as... he's been doing it obviously a lot longer than Barnico, but if you think where Jack was at that age versus where Barnico is now, you got to think what does the next kind of seven or 8 years look like then for Will Barnico. You got to think there must be a massive ceiling there.
So, there's a big age gap for sure. I would say Barnico and Rowe are just different athletes. Like, I mean, I loved how Barnico just ended that interview. You know, you're never going to be a world-class 5K runner if you haven't got the speed over the 1500. And that is where the event's at. You're never going to win anything. Mm. That's for sure. If you haven't got the speed over the 1500. And, you know, when you look at Rowe, that's probably his Achilles heel. You look at Barnico, I mean, he's already running 340.
Mm. But then that's where Rowe's gone and said, well, actually, I can make myself a top-class half-marathon runner. And that's how I'm going to attack it, you know. So,
but I think
Jack Rowe will run a good 10K, though, in the next couple of years.
You want to run close to 13 minutes, I think you've got to be running 3:33. Mm. I don't know anyone who's run 13 lows and I guess Butchart was probably the best guy to look at in a sense that he was what, like 13:05 and 3:35. But for me, Butchart would never actually race at 50. He would literally front run a Watt for BMC and run 3:35.
Yeah.
You could probably say he was in 3:33 shape when he was in his best 5,000 meter shape. And
yeah,
that's a worry for a lot of our 5K boys. And I think this is why people like James West is an exciting prospect, is because, you know, yeah.
What, yeah, and someone like Callum Elson perhaps as well.
Maybe. Let's see how he goes over the next few years. But, you know, I'm not sure.
I just think that, I'm not being funny. Elson's just made his Eurocross team, like, on a long course after doing it. I think that guy, he's just, like, hitting away kind of every kind of ball that comes at him, you know. So
he is. Like, I think he's just got more talent. I think he's got more talent over the 15.5 though. So I'm, I'm trying to. I think he will be a better athlete over 1500 than 5K, and I think he probably knows that as well himself. But yeah, so back to that comment, you know, that Barnico made just finishing up there. I think he is dead right, and I think he will attack that 1500 a little bit more this year. Because if he attacks that this year, next year he's got another season to kind of load up that mileage and transition that into a 5,000 meter race a little bit more. So, he's an exciting prospect. I mean, what can he run? You look at the races he wins, like he beat Matt Stonier, and I think people will comfortably say Matt Stonier is capable of a 13:20 or below.
Yeah, I think Matt Stonier is easily in the 13:15 range, like, for sure.
Yeah. I would say so. You know,
he's got to be, like, how well he performs on the cross with his 1500 time. Of course, he is. So, he's going to be someone who we see 3K indoors. It'll be really interesting as well. So,
yeah. So, but I think you know, for me, I think Barnico's head is his biggest asset, and. Mm. Like, I was fortunate enough to see the guy at Eurocross. You know, I even asked him that question, you know, how do you kind of deal with everyone talking and, you know, talking about training, talking about racing, talking about themselves, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I think he enjoys it a little bit, but honestly, he just doesn't care. And I've seen him at competitions before. He's just having a day out with his mates, you know, road relays. He's just there. He's chilled. He's just having a day out with his mates. And, you know, he's not fussed about whether someone's off you know, someone's off chasing times in Europe, or, you know, someone, you know, similar level to him is, you know, is kind of faster than him, has a faster PB. He doesn't care. He's not scared of anyone. I think that's the most exciting thing for me about the boy is his head. It's just so strong. And, you know, he has a really simple outlook on the sport. I think you need that in the kind of position he's in. And interestingly, on that position, you know, that I think he's been very lucky, the fact that he's almost come through, not lucky because he's put himself in that situation, but having Jack ahead of him. And it's almost like Jack and him were going through the same decisions, like a year apart, because Barnico is so good for his age. But, you know, I remember when Roe was deciding, you know, what agent he was going to go with, what contract he was going to sign, this, and this. These are big decisions that stress you out. And I think, and they start to shape the angle of your career a little bit. They start to shape what races you're going to do, what direction you're going to take over the next few years, because of all these bonuses and whatnot. And I think Barnico was, he didn't have to think about that at all. And I think I'm not even sure he realizes how easy and that process was for him, and like unstressful, because he barely met, you know, we try to bring it up in the podcast, sort of just brush it over, didn't even think about it, you know, just let people crack on. And before you know it, he signed with Puma and he's getting sent free shoes. So I think he's fortunate there. And I think a lot of people don't realize how hard that period of your life can be when you're an athlete, because how many athletes do we know, Lum, who chase contracts and it shapes what races they do, and, you know, and what their goals are. And it's a very stressful time. And so Barnico, credit to him, negotiated that period of his career very well, even though it was early on.
Yeah, 100%. And on Puma, they are going to be on sports shoes for the first time very, very soon in 2024, which is brilliant, because actually, I think from kind of first-hand experience as well, like, brilliant shoes, kind of across the range, like whether that's like easy running or your racing flats, and even the spikes if you can get hold of them as well. So exciting stuff on the product front, and they're a brand that's really kind of taking over at the moment, and have a lot of good British athletes and a lot of good athletes around the world. Like, you think of, especially you talk about kind of your distance runners, obviously have Mohamed, they have Barnico, they have Jack Rowe on the men's side. So like, great stuff, and obviously quite a few on the women's side as well. So what's to come then, Matt, before we wrap up this episode? We got some indoors, we got some road stuff, we got some cross stuff. This is always the time of year, January, February now, where whatever you like in athletics, you can get kind of your fix of anything, because there's all sorts of disciplines going on.
Oh, what a period. I mean, next few weekends, look, Ribble Valley this weekend, you got Sheffield Indoor Grand Prix the weekend after. That's usually, you know, the first indoor race from a domestic perspective that we take note of. Valencia 10K the week after that. You bet your life we're going to have a whole host of Brits out there. I mean, we went out to that last week, Lum, and goodness, that was we must have been sharing a plane with 100 other British, 10,000, you know, people doing the event.
Yeah, so to be fair, if you want to watch our Valencia vlog from last year, go on a Sunday Podcast YouTube, because we kind of chat through the cost of going to a race out of Valencia 10K. Obviously, last year, there was a bit of issues with the start. There was a big pile-up, so I hope it's better organised this year, because it did get a bit kind of hairy for some people on the start line then. And obviously, a lot of people's times were affected just by traffic and sort of by our human traffic. I mean, kind of just being stuck behind this flow of moving athletes and just going through the timing mat at the start and then having to stop because it was just a complete standstill. So
problem is, mate.
Yeah, let's hope it's a bit better.
It's a problem these races have got now, and it's just that the elite women start next to, you know, side by side the elite men. Elite women are running, what, 30-odd minutes? Think about how many men are running inside 30 minutes. Mm. Yeah, some of the elite women run 29 minutes, to be fair. It's outrageous.
But then some of the elite women are running 32 minutes.
Exactly. And that was the problem last year. And it's a problem that I don't know how race organizers sort it out, because running with men is such an asset, is such a bonus for elite women, because they're going to run faster. They're in a massive pack. They're getting carried along. But when it's a start line like that and they have to put the elite women like on the front row, it caused problems. And that was the chaos last year. So hopefully they have something in place which doesn't cause as much issues this year. But yeah, Valencia.
It was that, and also a lack of queuing from people behind as well. just like jumping forward and pushing and shoving and stuff like that. So
panic when the gun goes, So that's what, the 14th week after that is this home nations cross country, which we'll obviously hopefully have a lot more on nearer the time. I've heard a few things about it. I don't think, I mean, this will come out. I think I'm allowed to say this, but on who were due to be involved with this race, I don't think we'll be involved with this race. I think.
No, they're not. I saw Ollie Laws tweeted it. So we can say.
I'm good to say. Not, and this is a, I would say that's a big disappointment. And again, me and you have said, why haven't we been hearing things about this? I mean, this race in September was built to be some amazing cross country, Highgate, but on the mud, you know, 9 to 10Ks on the mud. And I don't think it's going to be that. I'll be surprised if it is that, because it sounds like a lot of people are, well, on it, for one, can't be a part of it. And we know the kind of the financial sponsorship.
Yeah, and it sounds like they're putting a load of plans as well. They put plans in place and then they were told, no, you can't. So it's no fault of their own.
Exactly. And, you know, again, this Nike partnership that British Athletics have with Nike has come to bite them in the butt once again. So anyway, that's going to take place on the 20th. It's going to be the home nations cross country as well. So we're going to see people running, you know, for your home nations. I think it will still be a good race, but it won't be the kind of festival, I guess, highlight of the year that Highgate is on the track. And then the week after that, January is a busy month. Obviously, you got your area cross country champs. But Ribble Valley, just quick, let's just have a little brief. I mean, Jess Judd's doing it. She does it every year. Lauren Hayes is doing it on the women's side. Wally Williams. Not many other people, to be honest, mate, on the women's side. It's there's not too much depth. But then on the men's side, Ben Connor, Mark Scott, Callum Johnson, Rory Leonard, James Young, Rob Hawkins is doing it. They're probably your top 10K runners, to be honest. Oh, and James West, who we haven't really mentioned, who's going to be interesting to see.
Coming off that kind of fresh new 5K PB in Boston earlier in December. So,
Yeah,
and then those are the ones we're really looking forward to, aren't we, mate? Is those Boston meets come February? So we'll see people. Probably that probably is your best chance of getting the Olympic time for a lot of people.
Absolutely,
definitely. Well, thanks for listening, guys. Hope you enjoyed this kind of new format of the episodes. If you've got any ideas around kind of discussion topics or events you'd like us to cover, please send us an email to info@sundaypodcast.com or just tweet us or send us a DM on Instagram, and we'll try to accommodate your wishes as best we can. But thanks for listening, and we'll catch you very soon.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.